Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome to another edition of I Won't Stop Until I Win. I am your host, Jose Flores, and each week I'll be sharing inspiring stories of people who push through the pain, who overcome adversity, and who keep on running their race to become the winners they are today. So thank you for spending some time with me, and let's jump right into the show. Hey, what's going on, family? Thanks again for hanging out with me for another week of I Won't Stop Until I Win. And before I start every single podcast, I always like to give God some thanks because I believe that without him, none of this would be possible. So I just pray that anybody listening is inspired, encouraged, and motivated to not only learn more and do more, but to become more. And I pray that in Jesus' name that you can take all these nuggets that we're going to drop here and apply them to your lives. Listen, guys, as always, every single week, you know I always bring the fire guests on the show, and this week is no different. Today's guest, he spent a lot of time in the music industry before transitioning to the fashion world, going on to set the establishment of the Vibe Online and Blaze fashion segments, which led to the opportunity for him to produce an all-out fashion show at Macy's Herald Square to launch the fashion segment. That went on to lead a vertical operation of his own design concept to screen printing, sewing, embroidery, photography, and now producing and editing commercials for his own brand. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend, my brother, this one is family, guys. Welcome to the show, fashion designer extraordinaire, Paul Arrington. What is going on, my brother? How you doing?
I'm going to thank you for the intro there. You know, again, I couldn't have done a better intro myself. So, I'm thankful for the intro, Zach. I'm good, man. I'm good. The weather's nice. It's warm here today. So, I have no complaints, man. No complaints. I'm up. I'm on my feet. So, everything from there is, you know, everything's doable. How's everything from your end?
Awesome, man. Yeah, everything is good, man. Everything is good. Every day above ground is a great day.
All right. That's a good thing.
Yeah, right. But listen, Paul, so let's jump right into it because I know I want to talk about a lot of stuff. You got a lot of stuff going on. You've been to a lot of places, around a lot of amazing people, changed a lot of lives, and you've just been doing some powerful things. But before we get into all of that awesomeness, man, I just want to just take it back a little bit because I know a lot of times people will see other people who reached a certain level of success and they're all they see is the lights, cameras, and action, everything that's glittery and shiny. But they don't know that, you know, the grind and the struggle and the hustle that those individuals have had to go through to be able to get and reach those levels of success. So tell us a little bit about the younger Paul and how you were able to become who you are today and what sparked that interest and that desire for you to, you know, get into the music industry and also ultimately become this huge fashion guru.
Again, you know, I'm from the Bronx. I grew up in the Bronx, and I know you can relate to that because you're originally from the BX, and you know how that is. Every day is a hustle. You're grinding to try because you want more. You want to do more. You want to see more. You want to be more than, you know, what your environment, you know, is. I don't believe in the concept of becoming a product of your environment. You can do and be anything that you choose to be, regardless of where you are. I mean, look at some of the people out here that have come from absolutely nothing and have turned their lives into, you know, a complete success, whether it be financially or spiritually or whatever it is, you know, you gauge your success by. You know, I grew up with a lot of people in the Bronx, a lot of friends. We used to hang out. Most of the people I hung out with were the older crowd. Most of them were, I don't know, a few years older than me, but I always looked at it like this. I got a chance to learn more, see more, hear more, and do more, you know, from them, you know, because again, they were older than me. So they were able to get in and had access to different things, and they just brought me along versus, you know, dealing with, you know, my own age group. It's like, it's hard to learn from, you know, somebody in your age group because you both are stumbling through the same process.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, the saying goes, if you're the smartest person in the room, then you're in the wrong room. You know, you need to be in some place where somebody knows more than you so that you can learn. And that's always been my concept, and it still is to this day.
That's right. That's right, man. So what was it that encouraged you or the you know, that you developed that passion to get into the music industry and then eventually into the fashion industry?
The music came about because of my friend Jason that I grew up with. His uncle was having a party, and his uncle asked him, "Hey, do you know any DJs? I need a DJ." So Jason was like, "Yeah, don't worry, we'll do it." And I was like, "What?" I was like, "You know, we'll have a DJ." And he was like, "Don't worry, you know, we'll get this." So we scrambled to get some equipment together. Jason got some turntables. I borrowed my dad's speakers, and you know, we went to his uncle's house. We set up in the bedroom and everything, and you know, we put some records and stuff on, not really knowing what we were doing.
A good old house party, huh?
Yeah. It was enough to get us motivated to be like, yeah, I like that. You know, so looking back at it now, the mixing skills and everything was terrible, but it was the foundation. You know, the lesson of it is more valuable than anything you could have been paid for. You know, so sometimes the money is great, but the money is not the lesson. You know. And the things that you do. Sometimes the journey, well, not sometimes, most of the time, the journey is the lesson. That's the value in what you do. And from there, we just started DJing, you know, school parties and the block parties down in Boynton and Evergreen Avenue back there. Yeah, I see you smiling. Yeah,
those good old block parties, man, with the DJ was the man on the block parties, man.
Exactly. You know, so we did that. A friend of my dad's at the time needed a place to store his equipment. So, you know, he kind of put a deal together, you know, with us to allow us to use his equipment, you know, while it was, you know, there in the house with us. So it gave us a different perception at the parties. Now, I mean, we had huge, like, bass bottom speakers, you know, rack full of amps and things like that. So Now we'd show up at the party looking like we had a lot of power, you know, playing with. And, you know, as a DJ, perception is everything, you know, not just the music, but the system. You know, people walk in and be like, whoa, you know, like, this is really going to kill it. And we did, you know, and we learned from it. And from there out, I started to get into, you know, wanted to explore a little bit more. So I got into production. I started buying drum machines and keyboards and things like that. And, you know, at some point I took the closet in my bedroom and cleaned out all of the closet and put the acoustic foam and the carpet and stuff on the floor and created a sound booth. And I had guys come over and they would record in the closet, and they were paying to record in the closet. But I got a clean sound, and it taught me how to make things come together, how to go from a concept, an idea, into a tangible product or bring something to fruition, you know. And from then, it's just like, okay, so this is how you do, you know, things. And I've always kept the same formula, you know.
That's funny. The reason I'm smiling so much, man, is because here's a little fun fact for a lot of the listeners, that when I was 15 years old, I got my first DJ equipment too. And I was DJing for some years. And then just like you, man, after you DJ for some years and you get nice with it, it's like almost inevitable that you want to start to produce the beats that you're playing. You want to start producing your own music, and you get that itch and you get that feel for it. And I bought some drum machines too, man. So that's why I was laughing the whole time. And the fact that you created your closet, you turned your closet into a sound booth, a recording booth, you know, there's so many stories about people that I know that did that as well. But that's all a part of the grind, man. That's all a part of the grind, that it's like, I'm a firm believer that you use what you've got to make a lot. Exactly. Right? You use what you've got to make a lot. Like, you don't have to have all the resources. You just have to be resourceful and creative. And that's what you did.
Exactly. That's awesome. I mean, you know, and not to cut you off, but one thing I've learned is, sometimes the more that you have, the less you're capable of if you don't have that drive to do it. And some people that have less do more than those who have the total resources around them. So it all comes down to you the person, where you intend on being at, you know. So
That's a great point. I love that. So how did being, you know, into the music industry and learning about DJing and producing and mixing and engineering, how did that lead into the fashion industry?
Okay. I spent a little more time in terms of like the music and stuff like that. By the time I went to college, I was a communications major, and I had advertising and marketing as a minor and stuff like that. But within my communications courses, I had an audio recording class. And the recording class, we actually did the class partially in the school and partially in Calliope Studios in Manhattan. You know, I went to NYIT, you know, for college. And being in Calliope Studios and stuff like that, I've learned a lot more. But it was familiar to me because I had already started to assemble, you know, the keyboards, the drum machines. I had a small mixer. I think I had an 8-track Tascam, you know, mixer that had the little cassette, you know, insert. You put it in and you start recording and stuff like that. So, you know, it became familiar to me. So as I did that and I started to branch out and deal with other people recording and stuff like that, it led to an internship at first at RCA Records. I was interning in the promotion department, which actually afterwards I got hired at the time. During that time period, SWV was on the label, you know, and I was surrounded by, you know, quite a few people, but there was a lesson here. You know, the point was the lady I was working for in the promotion department, one day she had to ask me, what do you think about this album? And she didn't really tell me much of who it was. And then when I saw it, I was like, it was SWV. And there was another person in the room. She didn't tell me who it was. I was like, ah, it's all right. You know, I like this. I don't like that. This could be better. I think a couple of times I was like, oh, that's why, you know. Another person looking over and come to find out that was their manager. You know, so I was like, oh, wow, okay. You know, it taught me how to be mindful of what you say, but still be truthful about what you say. You know, because the manager was looking like, I don't know, you know, you're just an intern. You just started here. We've been, you know, banging this stuff out for a while. So they gave me social skills as well. You know, because growing up, I was kind of a shy kid. I didn't keep to myself. I had a lot of friends, but, you know, I was always in my head thinking, always, you know, thinking and building and, you know, planning, you know, to do stuff. But that moment at that label, you know, gave me the social skills to deal with people that are really making things happen. You know, the other aspect that I learned was also in the promotion department, I had to deal with record stores and things like that and tracking, you know, songs. And when you call, you had to have a certain persona about it. So you just can't call them, yeah, I'm calling from RCA Records, I'm tracking. No, it doesn't work that way. So they would give me the profile of the person, you know, the record shop, the owner, how many kids they had, how long they were married and things like that. So, you know, I'd call up like, hey, Jose, you know, how's it going, man? How's the family? How's the kids? You know, how's everything? You know, listen, how are we looking on the, you know, on the SWV, I'm so into you, what you doing? You know, is it selling this many units? If not, what can we do, you know, to get your sales up, to make you some more money, you know? But you start to see how to be able to talk to people and motivate them and get them into what you're doing so that they work your product even more, you know, even more so. So going from that, you know, I took that experience, and after a while I stopped working in because there was a lot of politics I didn't like at the label and stuff like that.
There's always those politics
that you hear about that are, they're very true, you know, some of the politics that go on. The job that I was working at, and this leads into the fashion, a guy that I used to work with, he used to make fun of my name. It's like, yeah, Paul Lamerton, menswear. And then one day I was like, you know what? I was like, that sounds about right. That sounds good. Let's see what we can do with that. And someone that I was dating at the time, her aunt, actually owned a factory in the Bronx on Westchester and Beach Avenue. There was like a building there, and upstairs, you know, she had a factory. They were making dresses and things like that. So she introduced me to her aunt. And, you know, I told her what I wanted to do. You know, she sat me down. She explained about fabrics and patterns and, you know, things like that. You know, I had no idea. Just like anybody else, I'd buy my clothes, get dressed, and that's all I knew. And, you know, I used to come to her with a lot of ideas. And one day she said to me, she was like, look, you know, I'm tired. You're going to have to make your own samples. And she taught me how to sew. She brought me to the factory. She had machines in her house. And she sat there and she explained every piece of equipment there and what it did. And the girls that, you know, she had working with her, women, I should say, they would do the same thing. You know, they'd teach me how to thread the needle, how to quickly pull it through, how to, you know, lay seams a certain way. And, you know, just started the foundation of learning how to construct a garment, you know. And the thing is, like, when you go to the store, like, you buy a garment, most people, you know, you just buy, like, oh, it's nice, but you don't realize how many decisions went into that garment. You know, I can look at the garment and be like, I can tell you at least 20 decisions, 20, 30 decisions made, you know, just to get this to where it is that you see it now. Everything from the thread, thread size, color, you know, the seam width, seam allowance, fabric, the way the fabric is cut before it's put together. If it's a t-shirt, how they're going to screen print it with colors, artwork, film, development, all sorts of stuff. And it comes down, all of that, to bring you a single product. You know, so it became an interesting journey, you know, from there.
That's awesome, because, you know, being a starting out as DJing and then producing and making beats and engineering, it's always like a dream of ours to get to a record label somehow, to intern for them, to work for them. I remember that when I was DJing, and that led into making beats, you know, then that led into me rapping, and I had a little rap group that we had, and we had did a little like a promo for DJ Red Alert on Hot 97, mm-hmm. when it was him and Wendy Williams was still there. And, you know, that was like our dream, send the promos out, try to see if, you know, they could start playing our promo on one of these stations. And mm-hmm. So the fact that you were able to make it to RCA, that's huge, man, that's huge. And to be able to be around all that, because, you know, music, fashion, it kind of all goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
I believe, you know, fashion, you know, sure. New York is just like the fashion, in my opinion, the fashion capital of the world. You know, mm-hmm. I know you got Italy and all of that, but, you know, New York is New York. There's no place like it. And we're trendsetters. We create our own styles. We create our own images. And now the fact that you have Paul Arrington Denim Studio, I want to get into that, because I know that got, you know, like you said, it takes about 20 to 30 decisions to make one fabric, but you have a whole line now of things out there. And not only do you have a line out there, but you also have a, you sent me this, man. And for those of you that know about me, you know that I'm a cologne guy. I have my collection of colognes and I love the smell goods. And, you know, he sent me Pure Denim cologne. This thing right here, guys, is fire. You need to go ahead and pick this up. Check this out. We're going to drop the links to his sites and all his information in the show notes when this episode drops. But, you know, I'm real particular when it comes to cologne. And when you sent me this one, I was like, let me see what this is about. Sprayed it on. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. My wife was like, oh, wow, yeah, babe, that smells good. I was like, yeah. And I put this one in with the good ones.
Oh, okay. So you got a side for the good stuff. You got a side for the good stuff
that you bring out when it's a special occasion. And then you got like the everyday stuff that you don't care how fast you run through it, you know? This is definitely
like, I'm going to the store. I'm going to throw this one on. I'm just going to Walmart. I'm going to throw that one on.
yeah, you know, but this is, not for nothing. And with all realness and sincereness, thank you for sending this to me. You also sent me some sneakers too. Fire, we're going to get into that, but it really does smell good. And I'm not just saying that because you're on the show. It really does smell good and I really like it. So I appreciate that. But tell us, man, about Paul Arrington Denim Studio. How was that like? What made you want to start your own thing? And how, man, your thing is blowing up like crazy. The fashion is on fire. The styles are crazy. They look amazing. They're top quality. Made in Italy. A lot of the stuff is made in Italy. I saw the sneakers you sent me. Quality was great. Felt soft and good. So tell us a little bit how that started and where you are today, man.
The Denim Studio line came about, well, let me back up a little bit because there's a whole long journey before I got to that. Initially, I was doing, you know, urban sportswear, just, you know, Paul Arrington, and I did urban sportswear because, again, I came from the Bronx. I came from, you know, that time period when you had, like, Mecca and Maurice Malone's and, you know, and all those other brands that were around. So I came up being influenced by them because I wore it myself. I'm sure you did too.
Yeah.
Baggy jeans.
And Perry Ellis.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. The Perry Ellis America jackets and the shirts. And yeah, so I came up, you know, during that period. So initially I was doing, you know, urban sportswear. And as I progressed through it, and it's not to say I didn't like it because I still love it, but I saw that I could do more with the name and the brand. You know, I was doing shows actually with Def Comedy Jam, and a lot of people didn't notice. Def Comedy Jam they were touring, but they were doing fashion shows along with their tours. And what they were doing, they had the comedians modeling, you know, the product that the designers that were in it. Now, the designers that were in it were those that you know today. I was doing shows with like FUBU, Maurice Malone, you know, they did shows. A lot of the big players that you see out here now started, you know, doing those Def Comedy Jam shows. And it was just a lot of fun behind backstage, man. Even the comedians you see today started with that. And to give you an example, Mike Epps was one of them. You know, everybody from Mike Epps to A.J. Johnson from the movie Friday. You know, he played Ezell, the little guy that was, you know, he used to do the Def Comedy Jam tours. And, you know, it just became a really fun environment, man. And, you know, so from there, as I started to do this, you know, urban sports, where I got into several stores, there was one store in the Bronx called Gasoline Stop. It was by, in the Bruckner Plaza, you know, so I had went in there and, you know, I had no experience, you know, selling clothes. So I just went in, I asked for the manager and for the buyer, and I had put together a little picture portfolio. And he was like, okay, you know, come back and we'll send you out to the office, you know, the actual owner does the buying. So I showed him some product and he took a chance on it and actually sold, you know, so it was a good feeling to be like, Gasoline Stop was right behind the building that I lived in, you know, in Park Lane. So to be able to come out the building and your product is in the store, you know, right behind the building was like, oh man, feeling great about it. And it was just a really, really good experience. I tried other stores. Actually, I had gotten into, I did the Black Expo a couple of times at the Jacob Javits Center. Mm-hmm. And met some great people there, got into some more stores, met some other people. A good friend of mine, Dave Huey, he introduced me to a store out in Queens called Man on Man. And I forgot what mall they were in, but the guy took the product, you know, sold some stuff, and from there started to build, you know, I started to understand, you know, how a lot of this stuff worked with putting product together, you know, because again, remember in the beginning, I said I had someone I was dating, my aunt owned the factory, so she was helping me, you know, putting some of this stuff together, you know, and trying to get it to where it needed to be, you know, to be in the stores. Now, as far as the t-shirts, I was just learning graphics. I didn't really know much about it. So I had put one together and I had did the Black Expo and I was like, man, you know, this shirt is great. Got there, sold absolutely none of them. Not one, bro.
Wow.
One, you know, and I was like, man, what's going on? You know, but it taught me the lesson of being able to make a product that looks good versus a product that's sellable. There's a big difference. You know, you can put something together that you believe looks good, but is it something that people want? Mm. You know, there's a major difference between the two, and that.
Yeah, that's right, a good point right there.
Yeah. So I did the Black Expo a second time for a second year. I came back. I had other t-shirts. I actually had some long sleeve t-shirts for the life of me. I don't know why, in the middle of July, but they sold. The t-shirts sold. And I actually had a jacket, you know, that I had done. I had done a few of them. I was like, all right, let me charge about $100 for the jacket. I sold more jackets than I sold t-shirts, you know, in the middle of July. You know, so it made me understand, you know, the difference between a good looking product and a product that's sellable.
Yeah.
In a whole different world.
And they knew that fall and winter was coming. So they was like, let's get these early.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's exactly what happened. You know, from there, as I did the urban sportswear, it became more saturated because there were more brands that came out, like Pure Players and all sorts of stuff that was just like all over the place. I was like, man, you know, these guys are coming out, and it became too much, you know. So I said to myself, let me see what I can do, you know, because the name itself allowed me to do more. So I was like, let me try and venture into something else. So I started to venture into more of a dressier look, like the button-down shirts and the, you know, pants and things like that. Because at the time, Banana Republic was popular, you know, So a lot of the things that I emulated were driven by Banana Republic, the, you know, the nice stretch dress shirts and the pants, and, you know, I tried to do suits and things like that. And I went to a showroom to get a salesperson. And he said to me, he was like, look, sorry. He was like, look, you know, the stuff is nice, but it looks like a Banana Republic. He was like, you know, why do we need another one of these when there's one of those already? You know, he was like, look, the best thing you're probably going to do, you'll probably do better if you spend a wholesaling, put your product out yourself. And this was well before the internet and e-commerce is where it is today. You know, so I was just feeling like, man, I just got shot down, but there's a valuable lesson there.
Yeah.
It teaches you, you know, that sometimes the advice that you think is detrimental to you is actually not. You have to find the lesson within there. And that was to look at my product, see if it's sellable, make sure I have a niche of my own. I'm not emulating someone else, and, you know, just push the product myself. You know, and again, and there's nothing wrong with emulating someone else, because in the beginning, when you first start, you don't have a style of your own. You're going to emulate those you see around you until you come into yourself and become comfortable with expressing your ideas, not the ideas of others through you.
That's right. And I think that goes across the board with any industry. You're always going to try to emulate whatever you like, whatever you look up to, whatever you think looks fresh or hot. And that goes, like I said, across the board, even with speaking. Like, I'm in the speaker business, so I looked at other motivational speakers that I like, that I admire, and then I would emulate them and take some of their stuff and incorporate it with some of my own. So that's definitely a truthful, honest, powerful statement right there.
Yeah. You know, so once I made the change and I started to, I got into tailoring, actually. You know, being in New York, I went into Manhattan, went into some of the better fabric stores, and I would talk to the guys on the side that were tailoring for these fabric shops. I was like, look, I'm looking to do this. I need a tailor. Are you willing to do some work outside of, you know, the store? Yeah, of course. No problem. So I started digging through my backyard of who I knew that knew someone. And I started dealing with basketball players and, you know, different celebrities and things like that. The basketball player scenario is a whole different experience, man. I remember one player I dealt with, and this is a funny story. He had just got signed to the Timberwolves at the time. They were a new expansion team for the NBA. And we went to the hotel. I had the collar styles, the cuff styles, button styles, and everything. Presented the whole thing. He was like, yeah, I love it. You know, I want one of these, but let me ask my mom if I can buy a suit first. I was like, what? I was like, oh, you're making $8 million.
That's crazy.
So I was like, all right, man. So you know where that went. That just went out the window. You know, but it led from that to me dealing with Damon Dash. I was working on the Damon Dash suit collection when he was trying to get that out there. A guy that I had met at BET. You know, he was like, look, I know what you're doing. Dame is looking for some people to handle fabrication and the tailoring and stuff like that. So they brought me to the office. And, you know, I had met Dame years ago, but not in the way that I had met him that time. So, yeah. And he was just, I think he had just married Rachel Roy, which, you know, she became a designer and had her product out. She still does, I believe. And dealing with that itself was an adventure. Got a chance to go deal with Allen Iverson. You know, I took myself to Taylor. We went out there to measure him. You know, you get excited. You want to capture that moment. You're like, yo, that's AI. I want to get a picture. First thing they tell you, they was like, no pictures. We was like, what? You know, so I was like, chilling, Taylor. I was like, yo, we going to get a picture, man. You know, so we tried, you know, tried to get a picture with him. They shut that whole thing down quick. They was like, no, nah, y'all got to go. I was like, oh, man, come on. But it was a lesson learned. You know, your professionalism is always first. You know what I'm saying? You got to maintain your professionalism. You know,
yeah.
Everybody's a fan of somebody, you know what I'm saying? But in that moment, you got to maintain your professionalism. And that was the lesson there for me, you know, to get the work done, even though we did. And then afterwards, once you start to socialize, then you can, you know, work into the other stuff.
Powerful, man. Let me ask you this question. Where do you see... You know, what are you going to be, do you switch up for different seasons? Also, you're constantly creating for different seasons as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you're asking, where do I see myself in a certain time period, or as far as like, where do I see myself now, or from where I was?
Well, where do you see yourself now, and where are you going? Where do you see yourself within the next 3 to 5 years?
Where I see myself now, I see the progression. I can look back and see, you know, products that I've made back then versus now. I see the finishing quality. Some of the stuff I've done then, I look at it now, I'm like, you know, that was terrible. But that's part of the journey. You know what I'm saying? That's what makes you who you are. You have to fail in order to succeed. You can't succeed anything without having any failures along the way. The failures are the lesson. You know, they're just not there to set you back, but they're there to set you up for the next, you know, the next movement for you. But again, you know, after I left dealing with the, you know, the suits and things like that, I was like, look, I know there's room to do like a luxury sportswear that's somewhat in between the urban sportswear and, you know, the higher end products. And that's when I put together the Paul Arrington denim studio in between there. But as I was transitioning from that, I had an experience. And this just goes to show you that as you focus on things, you draw to you the people and the places and the resources you need to get them done.
That's right.
I used to have an office on 21st Street in Manhattan, 21st and 6th Avenue. And I was supposed to have a meeting. One of my good friends, Jamie Roberts, he's actually a comedian, professional comedian. And we were having a meeting and I forgot the key to my office. I was like, look, you know what? Let's go to Barnes and Noble's on 6th Avenue. We'll go upstairs. We'll get something to eat and just, you know, do what we got to do. So while we were there, I had looked over the rail and I saw Jada Pinkett, you know, downstairs. I was like, oh, wow, yo, let's go downstairs, you know, just, you know, talk a bit. So as I was coming down the escalator, Will Smith was right there at the bottom of the escalator, you know. So I had a postcard on me, you know, and I told him what I did, you know, and stuff like that. And he was like, are you any good? I was like, well, I think so. So he was like, all right, I'll have my assistant call you. I was like, oh, man. You know, when they say to my assistant to call you, that's usually the dismissive, like, yeah, just beat it. Just, you know. But he didn't do that. Will is true to that person that you see him in interviews. Before I got back up the steps to go to resume the meeting, his assistant called me and we set up a time for me to meet with them while they were there in New York, because he was filming Hitch at the time. Yeah. And not even 5 minutes later, the guy called me. So like I said, Will is that person. What you see, that's genuinely him.
Wow.
You know, he's truly a good person. We sat down, amazing, went over fabrics. Yeah, it was crazy. Went over fabrics, did some product. But, you know, he was like, okay, how much? And I gave him a price. And he was like, look, you know, you never want to lowball or underestimate your own value. So he raised the price for me. He was like, this is where you should be at based on what you're doing at the moment. And it taught me to, you know, value, you know, my own work, you know. And they bought it and, you know, they did what they did with it. And the lesson was, again, about value, understanding your own value, you know what I'm saying? Because it's all too easy out here to be like, you know, this person got $300 sneakers. Let me sell them at $100. You know, but meanwhile, the effort and everything that you put into it is worth so much more.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of you believing that. If you don't believe that, then no one else will. You know, and that's what that lesson was, you know, dealing with the, you know, with Will Smith and their assistant and stuff like that. So, but as far as where I see myself in 5 years, I just want to take everything to another level and be able to build it enough so that I can leave it for my son, his name is Paul Arrington. He's actually the third. So he'll have, you know, the opportunity to take over and give him a chance to do what maybe things that I couldn't do or I didn't see, you know, at the time. And he'll be able to take that and run with it you know. And
I know little Paulie too, and that boy is very creative. So don't be surprised if he blow up bigger than you.
So between myself and his mom and everything, yeah, he has a lot of creative energy. He has a lot of personality. He likes to be around people. He likes to, you know, exhibit what he does. He likes that attention, you know. So that right there is the formula for him to be able to take, you know, what I've done and take it to another level, you know. And hopefully I'll leave him some pretty, you know, exciting things, you know. Real quick, just to go back to tie the music and the fashion together, what I'm doing at the moment is the commercials that we're looking to put together here is obviously commercials need music and sound effects and stuff like that. So the music I'm going to score originally here, and that comes from the music background of production that I explained in the beginning. Okay. So a lot of the production that I'm going to do for the commercials here, what I did was put a collaboration together with a record label. A good friend of mine owns a very prominent label called Good For You Records. And they deal in house music, EDM, dance music, and all of that stuff. Okay. So we put a collaboration together so that the music that I'm going to have in the commercials will be available for sale, you know, through the label. So the label will push it on the various, you know, platforms like, you know, probably Amazon, iTunes, and TrackSource, and everything else. It's just another way to monetize, you know, the entire gambit of what's being done.
So what's the next big event or fashion show for Paul Arrington Denim Studio? When's that coming down?
Well, physical show, you know, we're still up in the air, man, because of everything that's going on. But what I've tried to do is become, you know, a little more innovative. And that was the whole point of the, you know, putting the record deal together, you know, between the fashion label and the music, you know, record label.
Right.
You know, because I think most people can take, you know, songs that they do and put them up on iTunes or whatever, or Amazon at this point. You know, as long as you follow their criteria, you know, and what they're asking for is not exceptionally difficult to do. But to get a record label to back your project and then push it, you know, that way was a little more innovative. Yeah. Because people still perceive labels as like, oh, wow, okay, you know, you got a label pushing you. Versus when you're independent, it's like, oh, all right, that's cool. You got some stuff that's available on Facebook or SoundCloud, and I can buy it, you know. So I just wanted to take it and make it a little more, you know, a little more interesting, you know, and give you that polish to it. So you'd be like, man, the record label's actually pushing them same songs that's in this commercial that I'm watching, you know. So just try to make it a little more innovative.
Yeah, that's dope, man. I love the concept. So DJing, producing music, Paul Arrington Denim Studio, commercials, what's the next big thing that you're trying to get into?
I think I know I definitely want to expand on the vertical part of it as far as like being able to produce a lot of the goods that we do here. And the whole concept of doing it, the whole idea of doing that was being able to go from a design concept to, you know, a finished product or pictured product and what have you, and with efficiency and cost effectiveness. When you started out, when you're dealing with screen printers and embroiderers, it's expensive. It's an expensive lesson, and it's expensive to develop your product. You know, so since I had been around it for so long, I was like, look, you know, some of the stuff I can do and incorporate it into what I'm already doing. And what my idea was is that if I can go from the concept to finished product, I can be done with my product before you even wake up the next morning. Not meaning specifically you, but
yeah.
You know, someone else. Yeah. You know, while your head is on that pillow, I'm up working. You know, and I can go from the idea to a mock up and testing online, and go from the mock up to, you know, an actual product and ship it. You know, and the good thing about it, with today's technology, I can create a photorealistic mock-up of the item and see how people respond to it. If people respond to it, then I can turn around and produce it and ship it. Whereas before, it used to be the other way around. You had to produce the goods, you produce the samples and the goods, and then you hope that all of your promotion and everything took effect enough to get people to buy it. But what I've tried to do is change that. you know, put the marketing out there, put the goods out there and see what happens. And then, you know, sell the product because we have the ability to make it here on demand. So I don't sit on the inventory like many big companies. And then once they don't sell it, it's trying to figure out where can I offload like this style of shirt that didn't sell as well as we thought. You know, I didn't want to do that. So like if we got four styles of shirts, if only two of them do well, we can go in, we can print them, we can make them, we can do them right there and, you know, ship them out. I don't have to worry that I'm sitting on, you know, X number of dozens of the ones that didn't sell. You know what I'm saying? So that's the value of being vertical with your own, you know, your own product.
That's dope. That's some gems right there that you dropped. And you actually answered a little bit of it, but I want you to go just a little bit deeper with, you know, for that person that's listening right now or watching, and they're wanting to start their own clothing line or their own fashion design, whether it's shirts or hats or tank tops or whatever the case may be, sneakers or pants. What are some tips that you can give them to avoid some pitfalls or to avoid some, you know, some speed bumps or potholes that they don't have to learn those hard lessons financially wise where they're, you know, creating and then, like we said, buying, getting them created and holding on to them because they like it, but it's not sellable. And now they're holding on to 200-300 t-shirts that nobody really wants. What are some tips that you can give those that are listening that want to start out and getting into the fashion industry?
Do your homework, you know, see what's out there, see what's selling, see what there is a need for. That stuff is still viable. But what you can do, but because of today's technology, create, you know, the mock-ups if you can. If you have a good computer and, you know, you can make a visual image that you can put on Facebook and put it out there to your friends or your social media following and see what they think, you know. Before you go ahead and just like, yo, this is hot, but really it's only hot to you. And now you done printed 300 shirts and everybody else is like, yeah, that's cool. But right. Then you can send me one, I'll promote it for you. And just, you know, I'm making any money, you know, cause I remember when I was doing the Black Expo and again, the shirts that I tell you, I didn't sell any of them. You know, people used to be like, yeah, just give me one. I'll wear it. I'll promote it for you. And, you know, I had to understand that, well, if you buy it, it promotes itself just the same. If you're going to wear it, you purchased it, you know, and it took time to learn to like, okay, I got to make a product that's sellable, you know, because they're going to promote it and I won't have to. Yes, you have to do some giveaways to get people interested in what you do, but you don't want to have to give away all of what you do, you know. So in this case, I would definitely, you know, take advantage of if you have Photoshop or if you have other, you know, access to creating the mock-ups, which a lot of companies offer now online. You know, there are a lot of what they call print demand companies, and they allow you to create mock-ups of t-shirts and things like that. Create a mock-up and put it on your Facebook and get people like, hey, this is what I'm looking to do. What do you think about this? You know, give me some feedback, give me some ideas, and take that and run with it. And once you get enough, you know, feedback where people like, yo, I want that. You know, when are they available? Okay, now you make them.
Yeah.
You know, and get them out there.
That's some good feedback. Very good feedback. Listen, Paul, where can people, you know, find more about you if they want to purchase some of that, you know, the cologne, the pure denim cologne that I got, if they want to get some of the sneakers, some pants. I saw some jeans that you got coming out. They look amazing, bro. I can't wait till you drop those. But where can they find more about you, social media, website, and if they want to get in touch with you and buy some of your stuff?
Currently, if you want to purchase, you can go direct to our e-commerce site. And again, this goes back to the advice I got from selling my product directly. You know, so you can go to www.paularrington.com or paularringtondenimstudio.com, and they'll both take you to the same destination and website and everything. But the product is also available on Amazon as well. So, you know, you can go to Amazon and do your search for Paul Arrington Denim Studio, and the pieces that we have there will pop up. We're about to increase the amount of items on Amazon, you know, for sale and kind of push, you know, more so that way, because I think a lot of people are comfortable buying with Amazon, you know what I'm saying? Not that my website is not, my website's up to par, but I think people have a greater level of comfort like, okay, if I get it from Amazon, then you got to ship it. If you don't ship it, I know I'm going to get my money back, you know. You know, so as far as the social media, you can look us up on Facebook. You know, we have some stuff on Instagram. I'm about to increase my Instagram presence. We're in the process of working on the commercials and things that are going on, like YouTube. And I know I'm building another media channel. I don't want to say too much just yet. That will be on all the major platforms. And you'll see a lot, I mean, a lot of stuff coming, you know, from this end.
Awesome, man. Well, there you have it, folks. PaulArrington.com or PaulArringtonDenimStudio.com. Or you can go to Amazon if you feel more comfortable there as well. Just type in Paul Arrington Denim Studio and just see all the dopeness and freshness that he has out there. Pick up your stuff. Summertime is coming. You want to look fresh. You want to look hot. I'm telling you, he sent me a couple items. They look amazing. I'm going to be putting the links in the show notes as well, so you guys, to make it easier for you to go and click on it as well. Paul, man, thank you so much for joining me. Hey, I wanted to just give one shout out before we let go too, because I wanted to do this earlier and I almost forgot again, but I want to give a shout out to your wife, man, Judy, who's my, she's like family to me. She's like my cousin, you know, her and I and her younger brother, Will, man, we went to school together. We all went to Catholic school when we were younger, and all grew up in the Soundview area, Lafayette, Stevenson High School. Yeah. So I just want to give a shout out to her. She's an amazing individual. So I just wanted to throw a shout out for her as well out there, because I see what she's doing with Paulie the third and you, and just how she just takes care of the family, man. That's something commendable and something to be honored
for. She's an amazing person, bro. Hands down, I couldn't ask anyone better. She's, you know, very supportive, very creative, and just an all-around good person. So, I, you know, I'm done. I'm good.
You're in good hands, my man. You are in good hands. Well, there you have it, folks. Thanks for hanging out with me and Paul Arrington, man. Be sure to check out his website, and I'm going to drop the links, like I said, in the show comments. But guys, thank you for hanging out with me once again for another week of I Won't Stop Until I Win. And until next week, make sure that you don't stop until you win. Take care and God bless. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of I Won't Stop Until I Win. Once again, I am your host, Jose Flores, and make sure you visit me at joseinspires360.com, where you'll see links to all my social media, where I'm bringing content like this every single day on how you can win and keep on winning. We have new episodes dropping every week, so make sure you guys like, subscribe, and share with other winners so that everyone can keep up with what's going on. Once again, I appreciate you tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode of I Won't Stop Until I Win.